Welcome to Homeschool Companion, your source for information, motivation, and inspiration. If you're part of the homeschool community or simply interested in learning more about home-based education, stay tuned. Together, we'll examine the latest resources, learning styles, and teaching techniques. We'll speak with experts in the field to help you uncover every homeschool advantage. We'll also present suggestions on how to keep Christ in the curriculum as we explore fresh ways to teach and learn. Here's your Homeschool Companion host, author, educator, and children's ministry specialist, Dr. Rose Gamblin.
Welcome, welcome. This is show 3 in a series of Stories of Christmas. And today we're going to be looking at stories out of the book called Chicken Soup for the Woman's Soul. And the title of this story is called Gifts of the Heart, and it was written by Cheryl Nicholson. And it starts with a neat little quote which says, "The love we give away is the only love we keep." And that quote is attributed to Albert Hubbard. Here we go. In this hustle-bustle world we live in, it's so much easier to charge something on a credit card rather than give a gift of the heart. And gifts of the heart are especially needed during the holidays. A few years ago, I began to prepare my children for the fact that Christmas that year was going to be a small one. Their response was, "Yeah, sure, Mom, we've heard that before." I had lost my credibility because I had told them the same thing the previous year while going through a divorce. But then I had gone out and charged every credit card to the max. I even found some creative financing techniques to pay for their stocking stuffers. This year was definitely going to be different. But they weren't buying it. A week before Christmas, I asked myself, what do I have that will make this Christmas special? In all the house we had lived in before the divorce, I had always made time to be the interior decorator. I had learned how to wallpaper, to lay wooden and ceramic tile, to sew curtains out of sheets, and even more. But in this rental house, there was little time for decorating and a lot less money. Plus, I was angry about this ugly place with its red and orange carpets and turquoise and green walls. I refused to put money into it. Inside me, an inner voice of hurt pride shouted, "We're not going to be here that long." Nobody else seemed to mind about the house except my daughter Lisa, who had always tried to make her room her special place. It was time to express my talents. I called my ex-husband and asked that he buy a specific bedspread for Lisa. Then I bought the sheets to match. On Christmas Eve, I spent $15 on a gallon of paint. I also bought the prettiest stationery I had ever seen. My goal was simple. I'd paint and sew and stay busy until Christmas morning, so I wouldn't have time to feel sorry for myself on such a special family holiday. That night, I gave each of the children 3 pieces of stationery with envelopes. At the top of each page were the words, "What I love about my sister Maya. What I love about my brother Chris. What I love about my sister Lisa. What I love about my brother Eric." The kids were 16, 14, 10, and 8. And it took some convincing on my part to assure them that they could find just one thing they liked about each other. As they wrote in privacy, I went to my bedroom and wrapped their few store-bought gifts. When I returned to the kitchen, the children had finished their letters to one another. Each name was written on the outside of the envelope. We exchanged hugs and goodnight kisses, and they hurried off to bed. Lisa was given special permission to sleep in my bed, with a promise not to peek until Christmas morning. I got started. In the wee hours of Christmas morn, I finished the curtains, painted the walls, and stepped back to admire my masterpiece. Wait, why not put rainbows and clouds on the walls to match this sheet? So out came my makeup brushes and sponges, and at 5 a.m. I was finished. Too exhausted to think about being a poor home, as statistics said, I went to my room and found Lisa spread eagle in my bed. I decided I couldn't sleep with arms and legs all over me, so I gently lifted her up and tiptoed her into her room. As I laid her head on the pillow, she said, "Mommy, is it morning yet?" "No, sweetie, keep your eyes closed until Santa comes." I awoke that morning with a bright whisper in my ear. Oh, Mommy, it's beautiful. Later, we all got up and sat around the tree and opened a few wrapped presents. Afterward, the children were given their three envelopes. We read the words with teary eyes and red noses. Then we got to the baby of the family notes, Eric, at 8. Wasn't expecting to hear anything nice. His brother had written, "What I love about Brother Eric is that he's not afraid of anything." Maya had written, "What I love about my brother Eric is he can talk to anybody." Lisa had written, "What I love about my brother Eric is he can climb trees higher than anyone." I felt a gentle tug at my sleeve, then a small hand cupped around my ear, and Eric whispered, "Mom, I didn't even know they liked me." In the worst of times, creativity and resourcefulness had given us the best of times. I'm now back on my feet financially, and we've had many big Christmases with lots of presents under the tree. But when asked which Christmas is our favorite, we all remember that one. Man, these stories all get me a little choked up. But doesn't it really speak to the fact that if we all just took a little time and wrote what we liked about each other, that it would have so much meaning for us? And I think that would be a great tradition. I'm going to add it to my family's tradition, and I hope each one of you add that to your family tradition. Can you imagine that little 8-year-old going, "Mom, I didn't know that anybody even liked me"? What a way to grow up thinking that your own family doesn't like you. And what a neat way to remind everyone how much we do really care about each other. The next story is called The Best Badge of All by Gary Neskern. When I became a Girl Scout, my mother told me this story about her scout troop and what happened to them a long time ago during World War II. On a chilly Saturday morning in December, the 11-year-old girls in our troop gathered excitedly at the bus stop where we met our leader, Mrs. Taylor. We carried large paper sacks filled with skillets, mixing bowls, and assorted groceries. On this long-awaited day, the girls of Troop 11 were going to earn their cooking badges. "Nothing tastes as good as the first meal you cook yourself, especially on an open fire," Mrs. Taylor smiled. It would take 3 bus transfers to get us all the way to the wilderness. As we boarded the first, we clutched our groceries as if they were bags of jewels. Several mothers had generously contributed precious ration stamps so we could buy the ingredients for a real breakfast. Pancakes with actual butter and even some brown sugar for homemade syrup. We scouts would earn our badges in spite of hardship, in spite of the war. In our minds, we were not only learning to cook in the wilderness, we were doing our part to keep life going apace on the home front. We finally arrived at Papango Park, a beautiful desert refuge filled with Palo Verde trees, smoky mesquite bushes, and massive red rock formations. As we started hiking up the dirt road into the park, a U.S. Army truck filled with German prisoners of war passed us heading into the park. "There goes those Germans," one of the girls said contemptuously. "I hate them." "Why did they have to start the war?" another complained. "My dad's been gone for so long." We all had fathers, brothers, or uncles fighting in Europe. Determinedly, we hiked to our campsite, and soon the skillets were filled with sizzling goodies while pancakes turned golden brown around the edges. The meal was a success. Mrs. Taylor's prediction about our gastronomic delight was proved correct. After the meal, one of the girls started a scouting song as we cleaned up our cooking site. One by one, we all joined in. Our leader started another song, and we continued wholeheartedly. Then, unexpectedly, we heard male voices. A beautiful tune sung in deep, strong tones filled the December air and drifted down to us. We looked up to see the cavernous natural shell and the red sediment boulder called Hole in the Rock, filled with the German prisoners and their guards. As they finished their song, we began another. They reciprocated with another haunting melody. We couldn't understand a word they were singing, but to our delight, we continued exchanging songs throughout the clear desert morning. Finally, one of the girls began to sing Silent Night, and we all added our voices to the Christmas carol. A few moments of silence followed, and then the familiar melody flowed back to us in German, Stille Nacht, Heilige Nacht. How can they know our Christmas carols? One of the girls asked our leader. They were our country's enemies. We continued to listen in awe. For an odd, unforgettable moment, the men in the cave became somebody's fathers and brothers, just as they understood us to be beloved daughters and sisters. In the years that followed, others probably looked at our new badges as proof that we could cook over a fire, but to us, they were reminders of the need for peace and a very strange transformation that happened one Christmas time. Well, we have to take a break right here. I hope that our series on stories of Christmas are cheering you up and also providing you with ideas that you can make this time more meaningful for your family. We'll be right back. You've been listening to Homeschool Companion. You know, we'd love to hear from you. Be sure and like us on Facebook at Homeschool Companion or partner with us. Send us a contribution or a show suggestion at P.O. Box 413, Smithsburg, Maryland 21783 or call us at 301-824-3162. Welcome back. I am going to read a poem called Angela's Word by Barbara Bassett. When Angela was very young, age 2 or 3 or so, her mother and her father taught her never to say no. They taught her that she must agree with everything they said, and if she didn't, she was spanked and sent upstairs to bed. So Angela grew up to be a most agreeable child. She was never angry and she was never wild. She always shared, she always cared, she never picked a fight, and no matter what her parents said, she thought that they were right. Angela the angel did very well in school, and as you might imagine, she followed every rule. Her teachers said she was so well-bred, so quiet, and so good. But Angela felt inside they never understood. Angela had lots of friends who liked her for her smile. They knew she was the kind of gal who'd go the extra mile. And even when she had a cold and really needed rest, when someone asked her if she'd help, she always answered yes. When Angela was 33, she was a lawyer's wife. She had a home, a family, and a nice suburban life. She had a little girl of 4, a little boy of 9, and if someone asked her how she felt, she always answered fine. But one cold night near Christmas time, when her family was in bed, she lay awake as awful thoughts went spinning through her head. She didn't know why, she didn't know how, but she wanted her life to end, so she begged whoever put her here to take her back again. And then she heard from deep inside a voice that was soft and low. It only said a single word, and the word it said was no. From that moment on, Angela knew exactly what she had to do. Her life depended on that word, so this is what her loved ones heard. No, I just won't do it. No, I don't agree. No, that's yours to handle. No, that's wrong for me. No, I wanted something else. No, that hurt a lot. No, I'm tired, and no, I'm busy, and no, I'd rather not. Well, her family found it shocking. Her friends reacted with surprise. But Angela was different. You could see it in her eyes. For they'd held no meek submission since that night 3 years ago when Angela the angel got permission to say no. Today, Angela's a person first, then a mother and a wife. She knows where she begins and ends. She has a separate life. She has talents and ambitions. She has feelings, needs, and goals. She has money in the bank and opinion at the polls. And to her boy and girl, she says, "It's nice when we agree, but if you can't say no, you'll never grow to be all you're meant to be. Because I know I'm sometimes wrong, and because I love you so, you'll always be my angels, even when you tell me no." And I think that's a great poem for a show that we will be having soon on helping children set boundaries, because they need to know how to set their personal boundaries just as we as adults set our personal boundaries. Well, with that, we'll go on to the last very short little story in this segment. And I just thank you for spending this Christmas time with us and listening to us. We're talking about stories of Christmas, and I'm going to share with you a story by Carolyn Steele called The True Spirit of Christmas. And the subtitle is, "If You Can't Change Your Fate, Change Your Attitude." And that's attributed to Amy Tan. "One more hour," I thought, "just one more hour and I'm free." It was Christmas Eve and I was stuck in beauty college. It wasn't fair. I had better things to do than wait on fussy old women with blue hair. I had worked hard and fast to get 4 shampoo sets and 1 manicure finished before lunch. If I had no more appointments scheduled, I could leave at 2 o'clock. Just one more. "Number 71, Carolyn, number 71. The receptionist's voice over the intercom made my heart fall to my stomach. "You have a phone call." A phone call. I exhaled a sigh of relief and headed up the front to take the call. As I reached for the phone, I gave the appointment pad a cursory glance to confirm my freedom. I couldn't believe it. I had a 4:30 perm. No one in her right mind would have her hair done on Christmas Eve. No one would be so inconsiderate. I glanced at the receptionist behind the counter. "How could you do this?" She took a step backward and whispered, "Mrs. Wyman scheduled you." Mrs. Wyman was the senior instructor and the biddy of the ball. When she spoke, no one argued. "Fine," I hissed and turned to the phone. It was Grant. His grandmother had invited me to Christmas Eve dinner, and could I be ready by 3 o'clock? Swallowing the lump in my throat, I explained the situation. After an interminable silence, he said we'd make it another time and hung up. Tears stung my eyes as I slammed the phone down and barricaded myself behind my station. The afternoon hung bleak and gray, echoing my mood. Most of the other students had gone home. I had no other patrons until the 4:30 perm, and I spent the time at my station stewing. At about 4:15, Mrs. Wyman stuck her pinched face around my mirror and advised me in her soft, no-nonsense tone, "Change your attitude before she gets here," and then quietly stepped away. My mood would change all right, from angry to murderous. I grabbed a tissue and whisked away the fresh tears. My number was called at 4:45. My tardy, inconsiderate patron had arrived. I stood brusquely up front to greet a very shriveled, frail old woman gently supported by her husband. With a tender voice, Mrs. Wyman introduced me to Mrs. Sussman and began escorting her to my station. Mr. Sussman followed us, mumbling his apologies for bringing her in so late. I was still feeling put upon, but I tried not to show it. Mrs. Wyman cradled Mrs. Sussman closely as she lowered her into my chair. When she began raising the hydraulic chair, I feigned a smile and took over, stepping on the foot pump. Mrs. Sussman was so small, I had to raise the chair to its full height. I placed a towel and a plastic drape around her shoulders, then jumped back, aghast. Lice and mites were crawling all over her scalp and shoulders as I stood there trying not to wrench. Mrs. Wyman reappeared, pulling on plastic gloves. Mrs. Sussman's gray top knot was so matted we couldn't pull the hairpins out. It disgusted me to think anyone could be so unkept. Mrs. Wyman explained that we'd have to cut her hair to get the mat out, and Mrs. Sussman just looked at us with tears streaming down her cheeks. Her husband held her hand tenderly in his as he knelt beside her chair. Her hair was her pride of all her life, he explained. She put it up like that on the morning I took her to the nursing home. Evidently, her hair hadn't been combed or cleaned since that morning, nearly a year before. His eyes misted over and he shuffled to the waiting room. Mrs. Wyman cut the matted top knot gently away, revealing a withered scalp peeling with yellow decay. She worked patiently and lovingly, and I feebly tried to help where I could. A perm would eat through her scalp like acid. It was out of the question. We bathed her scalp gently, trying to dislodge the lice without tearing her hair out. I dabbed antiseptic ointment on her festering sores and twisted her sparse hair into pin curls. The curls were held in place by gel, for we didn't dare scrape her scalp with clips. Then we gently fanned her curls dry near the warmth of the radiator. Mrs. Sussman slipped a palsied hand into her tiny bag and drew out a tube of lipstick and a pair of white lace gloves. Mrs. Wyman dabbed the lipstick softly on her lips, then carefully threaded the shaking hands into the dainty gloves. My thoughts were drawn to my grandmother, who had recently passed away, how she always put on lipstick before walking to the mailbox on the curb. I thought of stories she told of her youth, when no proper lady would be seen in public without her gloves. Tears formed in my eyes as I silently thanked God for having taken her with dignity. Mrs. Wyman left me to sterilize my station and returned with Mr. Sussman. When he saw his wife, their mutual tears flowed unchecked. Oh, dear, he whispered, you've never looked lovelier. Her lips trembled in a smile. He reached into his coat pocket and presented Mrs. Wyman and me each with a small nativity set, Joseph, Mary, and the baby Jesus. They were small enough to fit in the palm of my hand. I was filled with love for this man and his sweet wife, for perhaps the first time in my life, I knew the true spirit of Christmas. We walked the Sussmans up front. There would be no fee this night. We wished them a Merry Christmas and saw them outside. It was snowing lightly, the first snowfall of the season. The flakes looked like powdered diamonds. I thought briefly of Grant and the dinner I had missed, and I knew that on this Christmas Eve, his grandmother would understand. Sure makes you thankful for what you have, doesn't it? Well, we've come to the end of the show, and I have one last thing to say, and that is God bless.
You have been listening to Homeschool Companion, a production of MRG Media. Be sure to join us on Facebook. Just type in the name Homeschool Companion. For more on this or to contact us, go to mrgmediaministries.com. That's all one word, mrgmediaministries.com.